is the New South Wales Country Hour with Michael Condon on ABC Radio New South Wales.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to the program. And we've been hearing a lot about the rain the last few days or so. And we'd like you to give us a call, 9611 9722. That's 9611 9722. About whether the rainfall's filled in. Are we seeing tractors in the paddocks? What's happening at your place? Give us a call here at the Country Hour, because we've seen overnight particularly more rain at Brewarrina and also in the northwest.
So it's been absolutely, you know, they're only predicting 5 to 10 mil, and sort of it just came out and just absolutely poured down. Haven't seen heavy rain like that for ages. Absolutely beautiful.
Absolutely beautiful. What's happening at your place? 9611 9722 is the number to text us here at the Country Hour. And we'll look first of all at that story. A northwest cattle producer is hoping some impressive rainfall will lead to a reprieve from hand feeding his stock and also some time for overdue property maintenance work. David Haggerty from Rock Station at Brewarrina told Russell Varley more than 100 millimetres, about 120 millimetres of rain fell on his property yesterday. Something he hasn't seen for quite some time. Mr. Haggerty says the family woke at about 4 a.m. yesterday to those heavy downpours.
Basically, it started out here, we're just west of Brewarrina, and it's absolutely poured within sort of about an hour and a quarter, hour and a half. I sort of measured it about 5:30, and we'd had over 60 mil, or 2.5 inches in the old gauge. And then it came in again, and by 7:30, we'd had well over 100 millimetres or 4 inches, and since then we've probably had another, you know, 20 odd mil. So it's been absolutely, you know, they're only predicting 5 to 10 mil, and sort of it just came out and just absolutely poured down. Haven't seen heavy rain like that for ages. Absolutely beautiful.
What sort of falls have you had up till this?
Yeah, well, we've sort of been missing out. It's only been storms around and about. Until that sort of rain event last week, we'd only sort of had 11 mil, and then last week we sort of got under a fall of 53 mil, so it was, yeah, about 63 for the week, so that was a good start, absolutely beautiful, but this just, there's water laying everywhere, and, you know, the tanks and dams are full, and the river rose pretty significantly, you know, with regards to the amount of water that's going in. But we've just been out, and the channels are running, and yeah, it's sort of it puts that moisture around, and absolutely fantastic.
So, what does it mean to your operation?
Oh well, yeah, I suppose we're sort of lucky in this. We're on a bit of high country, so we've got red country, you know, where this is going into the channels and the black country and sort of flooded that. But from our point of view, it was starting to get a bit long, but hopefully it might give us a bit of reprieve. You know, like we sort of went last year, we sort of went 5 months without any rain at all, and hardly a cloud in the sky, and now it just seems to rain out of nothing. So, but you know, if we do get, we've been feeding now constantly now just on 4 years with a bit of reprieve of a month here and there. But if this is going to bring through some good grass and some good feed, it might give us a break for a few months so we can start to do a bit of maintenance on things that are sort of falling behind while we're being feeding. So that's what we can sort of hope for.
The feeding process can be all absorbing?
Yeah, it's not only time-wise, but financial, you know. We've probably spent, we're only a small operation, like we normally run about 250 cows and about 150 followers, and we're back to about 140-odd cows and 70-odd calves. But, you know, you put a cost value on that, and they're probably valued at about, you know, $3,000 to $4,000 a head with regards to what you put in over the last 4 years with regards to feed, and especially the cost of the feed that's occurred while everyone else has sort of been in the drought. So, you know, we might have feed on the ground, but, you know, financially we're still pretty well, you know, sort of spent with regards to money that we have put in.
So it's going to take time to put more stock on?
You know, like, okay, to go and buy the stock now is probably cost prohibitive, you know, with regards the feed that we've bought over the years. You know, our financial standing is we probably couldn't afford to do that, so we'd probably have to try and breed up. Well, you know, that may be another 3 to 4 years of breeding before we're able to be, you know, back where we were. So, you know, this is the thing. It sort of rains and everyone sort of forgets that, you know, and say the drought's over, but, you know, it's only just the recovery phase, if you'd like to call it that, because there's a long way back that, you know, as I sort of said, the money that we've invested has been huge. And, I mean, it's not only us, but it's a lot of the people out west that have invested a lot of that money into it. So it's going to be a long road to recovery.
David Haggerty from a rock station at Brewarrina, talking there to Russell Varley, and had well over 100 millimetres by the sound of things, 120, 130 millimetres. What's been happening at your place? You can send us a text or you can give us a call, 9611 9722. That's 9611 9722. Or you can send us a text as well. 0467 922 684 is the number to text us here at the Country Hour. But give us a call. Call in 9611 9722 and let us know what's happening at your place. Out on the tractor seeding, looking at some fertiliser. It's 11 minutes past 12.
You're listening to the Country Hour
on ABC Radio New South Wales.
Well, like many regional communities, the drought has and is continuing to have a big effect on local retailers. And while it's prompted some to go down the path of trying to encourage residents to spend their money at local shops, it's also seen communities step in to try and help each other, as Tim Fuchs reports.
It's a quiet weekday morning in the CBD of Forbes in the New South Wales Central West. The town, along with so many regional communities, has been struggling during the drought, with consumer spending drying up due to a drop in income for those on the land. President of the local business chamber, Mark Duggan, says the retail sector has been particularly hard hit, especially for those involved in farm machinery businesses.
We're a long way from getting over this drought. Cropping doesn't look positive at the moment unless we get some good follow-up. And the consequences of all of that is the rural sector is mainly affected. They're not buying machinery. They're not getting contractors in, so you don't have those people coming into our town. And just the local farmers and that, they're not coming into town because they haven't got any money, so they don't want to come into town to tempt themselves. So it has that sort of dominoes effect with everyone.
We're standing here on one of the main streets in Forbes. There are a few shops which have obviously closed in recent times. What's the situation like in terms of shops which have closed or retailers who are considering their options now?
I don't think any retail shop here has closed directly from the drought, but I think there's been a couple that it's influenced maybe an earlier decision with retirement or making other choices. The other thing with that, there has been a few businesses sold, so that's a really healthy sign. And we've also got some existing businesses that have rented premises and they've actually purchased their own premises and are in the process of renovating them. So they're all positive, healthy signs for our community.
Like other communities, retailers in Forbes have been trying to encourage residents to spend money at their local shops rather than online or heading into the city. In Forbes, it's called the Why Leave Town card.
To date, we've kept $500,000 here in town. So if you wanted to buy a voucher or you weren't sure, you could get a gift card, the Why Leave Town. And if you're a member of the chamber, that can be spent at any of those businesses that have a point of sale. So at Christmas time, it's often used as Christmas bonuses for staff. So it means that money is being maintained and recycled back through town.
Have you noticed during the drought that there has been a real attempt by local residents to try and spend money in their local community rather than buying online?
Yeah, I think that it has been a bit of a thing. Also, that buy from the bush, that has sort of put it under people's nose to sort of, it's been a good educational experience for people looking from outside, particularly from your sort of coastal areas. But it's also been a reminder for local people, okay, we need to have that more community involvement with bricks and mortar here. Yeah, just for the survival. If you haven't got a healthy CBD, you know, that has bad consequences.
Stuart Thomas is an accountant in Forbes and runs a nearby farm. He's noticed the ongoing impact facing farmers who have seen their income dropping.
Recently, with farmers, obviously the rains turned things around initially, so there's a bit of obviously chemical going out and a bit of confidence there, but it's only early in the season and people are holding back to a degree, waiting for soil temperature to drop. The associated industries have really been impacted by lack of cash flow coming in from farmers, and that's had the knock-on effect into the town. So businesses, trade's been pretty slow. Like, there's some businesses still going okay, but generally speaking, there's a downturn in business, and that's affecting community generally.
The drought has also impacted on the role of accountants like Stuart Thomas. He's recently been talking to clients about what they need to do to receive financial assistance from state and federal government agencies.
We've probably had more work to a degree. We're supporting a lot of our farmers and our business clients with drought applications, some loans and things. So that's created some more work. Obviously, we've got to work with our clients on cash flow to help with payment terms and that sort of thing.
And so they come in and farmers need assistance, or they need advice on what kind of access is available?
Yeah, I'd say both. A lot of it's advice in terms of what they can apply for, and then in turn there's also assistance in preparing applications for drought loans and government household support.
How have farmers handled the drought, in your opinion? I mean, you are a farmer yourself.
This drought's really changed the way people farm. So I think there's a lot of learnings out of it. People are a lot better now at managing livestock in small containment, and that's really improved, I suppose, their options. But there's been some heartache too. Like, there's been some serious situations where people have to sell assets, and it's affected mental health and things. So
And you'd be someone who would hear a lot about that, given your role.
Yeah, no, we do get to talk to a lot of people and just try and work them through making effective decisions and making them early.
That's Forbes accountant Stuart Thomas sending that report from Tim Fuchs. And we'd like to hear from you. You can give us a call, 96119722. That's 96119722. And give us a call and tell us what's happening at your place, how much rain you've had, and whether you've got the crops in. Les has joined us from Lismore. Good afternoon. Oh, we seem to have a problem going to... Are you there, Les? Looks like Les is gone. It's coming up to 18 minutes past 12 here on the New South Wales Country Hour. As I said, we'd like to hear from you. You can give us a call, 96119722. That's the number here at the Country Hour. We've got a couple of texts in. Troy from the Swamps texted in saying that he's got a swamp full of water and the cattle can get a drink. With every mouthful of grass, stress or lactating will strip the cows with calves to the bone. So he's saying he's selling calves before the cold weather, and he's not buying any cattle till after the shortest day. So he's expecting a bit of a bonanza of grass around about October, when the grass will start to grow again. That's according to Troy, and we're inviting people to, you can send us a text, let us know what's happening at your place, or you can give us a call, 96119722.
The New South Wales Country Hour with Michael Condon on ABC Radio New South Wales.
And we'd like to hear from you about what's happening at your place. But before we do that, let's turn our attention to wine, because yesterday we heard early reports that the wine export market into China had been decimated by 50 or 60 or even 90%. That was some of the reports we're hearing, due to the coronavirus. Well, the biggest reduction in wine sales is in tandem with those restaurant meal volumes due to the widespread quarantine in many Chinese regions. But online sales apparently may be getting a bit of a long-term boost. That's the view of Rob Geddes, who's a master of wine, and he's also a marketing consultant to quite a number of Australian wineries.
Yes, they've put up these very hygienic barriers. Quarantine is still a powerful social device in China. They're very proud of their achievement in this area. So people are not getting together and celebrating the party in the party manner that is typical in China of these very large dinners. So I think right now in China, there is a lot of wine that is undrunk, that would have been drunk on the Lunar New Year. and we're seeing changes in consumer behaviour as people are forced to go more online in order to buy. And we're seeing changes in also in delivery, where they're expecting delivery to be faster and delivery needs to be safe.
And so I guess you've had a business model, you set up a business model to do that, but it's fortuitous really, considering the virus, because it means less hand-to-hand or person-to-person contact.
The virus has definitely given the business that we are promoting a positive, but the underlying relationship of digital marketing and selling online in China is an area that Australia has lagged in, and I'm so pleased that we've been able to find the right product that we can bring back to Australia, and we've got it globally. We've got Australia as the first country in the world to get access to this technology because Australia sells $1.3 billion worth of wine in China, but selling only $300 million in online, whereas France is selling a figure of three times more than that, we see there's a very big opportunity to be able to empower the people in the bush, the people in the countryside who are making wine and selling it, to learn Chinese digital marketing. And this is an amazing leap forward, I think, because digital wine marketing in Mandarin in China would be quite hard to understand if you set yourself the target of doing it without an app.
So you've used the Vino app, or you've remodeled the Vino app from California, and you've turned it into a Mandarin version?
The Vivino model used crowdsourcing in order to get its information. So crowdsourcing means that the information comes from the general public. The Jokata Chinese app uses expert references and works with the initial audience being trade people who are very highly involved in wine professionally. So it's Vivino with Chinese characteristics.
And you were saying that the French are way ahead. Is it just because French wine is a lot more popular in China?
There's a rule in marketing, or I believe it's a rule that says you never get a second chance to make a first impression. So the French were in there early, and Chateau Lafite is incredibly famous over there. So the French have opened the door, but the door that's opened is Western culture and drinking wine. And when a lot of Chinese think of Western culture, they think of Australia. They think of the clean air, the sound legal system, and the great food and the delicious wine. So Australian wine has got the next step through the door after France. And interestingly, France suffers from vintage variations that can be quite dramatic. 2017, I believe, was the cold year, and there was a short crop. Australian exports grew exponentially at that stage. And so we have consistency, bar the last ugly 6 months in Australia, we've had consistency as a part of our professional reputation. So, yeah, Australian wine will continue to grow in China, and we just got to get it to grow online as well.
And you think that it's been given a fillip by the coronavirus, but it was trending that way anyway.
Yes, Australian wine is going to continue to grow in China because we have the reputation, the location, the time zone, lots of good geographical and social features. The coronavirus is going to change cultures, a lot of consumption culture, away from face-to-face, unfortunately, and leading to more home consumption. And so the digital wine space is well served for home ordering and home consumption.
But doesn't Australia have an advantage in that sort of face-to-face? I mean, we're sort of a convivial group of people, aren't we? I mean, don't we have an advantage there?
We do. Australia, that's one of the great things that they love about us, is that we are open-hearted and kind and maybe a bit simple. And the issue is that the world is going to change, and China is going to change the way it buys its wine fairly quickly. And so if we have one strength, we need to now move to a second strength, because I wouldn't want to be prophesizing anything dire, but it's just that we're not going to see the face-to-face consumption that we have seen in the past. There will be an air of caution about it in future, I believe.
And the younger Chinese are more and more embracing the online.
The average age is under 38, but in the under 28, age group, they will pull out their camera, their phone, they'll put the phone on a product, and the link in the phone will take them straight to the sales outlet. They'll be able to price it while you're wearing it, if you see my point. So they are so digitally literate that they will go shopping for the experience, but not the price. So it's a, shopping will, is a social event where you're there to look good, to have some fun, and the business of buying will be conducted more quietly at home. The typical Chinese customer references 6 to 8 information sources before they purchase. So they're not, the younger ones especially, are not in the business of buying from bricks and mortar. They're in the business of, or they're in the lifestyle of having fun and enjoying it and then buying patiently from home with a lot of referencing.
That's Rob Geddes, who's a master of wine. He's also a marketing consultant to a number of Australian wineries, and he's got quite a presence in China as well. And also he's talking about an app there that seems to be fairly popular, based on a Californian vino app. And he says that's the way the Chinese, particularly the young, tend to be buying everything, including wine. We'd like to hear from you about the rain. We've like to get some calls there, 96119722, about the rain throughout the state. And you can also send us a text, 0467 922 684, but 96119722 is the number to give us a call. And Jared's on the line, and Jared's a spraying contractor, is that right?
No, we're a manufacturer of spray boom sprays, and we manufacture spray units for farmers.
And you're under the pump at the moment?
Yeah, look, this we've been sort of pretty busy for a while here, but this awesome rain we've had is just, you know, really kick things up a gear. And you know, everyone now wants their sprayers now. We're selling a heap of second hand gear, you know, the shop's flat out with parts, so you know, it's all go at the moment.
And in the Riverina, so is it widespread? People are pretty happy?
Yeah, definitely, mate. Yeah, well, we've had, you know, we've sort of been missing out on rain here for a little while, but this you know, this last rain we got, it was really widespread, and everyone got pretty good rain. So, but we've, a lot of our sprayers get sent, you know, through Victoria, South Australia, northern New South Wales, through dealers. So yeah, we're always pretty busy there anyway.
And into the central west as well, they're getting some feedback that they have particularly been missing out, getting some feedback there as well.
Yeah, good rain. Yeah, good, really good rain all through there. Like some of our customers here, you know, have had up to 100 mil, so couldn't wish for better at this time of year.
And the best they've had for years for some people?
Mate, look, it's the best I can remember for a long time. You know, getting a good autumn break like this at this time, it's unreal.
And how's it been for your business in the lead up to that? It couldn't have been too flash.
Yeah, look, the last 12 months have typically been a fair bit quieter than we normally are. You know, hasn't been a lot of spraying going on. You know, a lot of guys have sort of held off on purchasing new gear. But that's you know, one good rain and it's turned the corner massively.
And so people spraying, and then are they looking to put in a winter crop already? Is that what people are telling you?
Yeah. Blokes have already started now. But mainly spraying now, you know, getting the country ready. But a lot of it, you know, blokes putting early grazing crops in have started now. So.
And just, I guess, some people waiting to see, getting the moisture profile up a bit?
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's as good as the rain is, you know, you'd certainly, another, you know, fortnight or something, you'd certainly take a bit more. But yeah, you know, you couldn't wish for a better start.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's hope. I think there's forecast to be some rain in about a week's time too. Is that what people are saying, possibly?
Yep. Already had a few people talking it up for next week. Might be a bit around. So
fingers crossed
that comes through. Yeah,
that'd be pretty handy as well.
It would be, yeah, for sure. That would set us up really nicely.
Okay, Jared, thanks for that. Jared at Stoll Spraying there, under the pump. It's 29 minutes past 12. Getting a few calls now coming through here on the Country Hour. You can give us a call. Let us know what's happening at your place, 96119722. We'll be crossing to the Weather Bureau shortly. But before we do any of that, let's find out what's happening with the news headlines now. And Adam Story, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Michael. Well, the Australian share market has come off its lows. It looks set to follow Wall Street. where stocks lost nearly 8% overnight. Meanwhile, Qantas is cutting the capacity of its international flights by a quarter because of reduced demand due to the coronavirus. Then the government says it's considering union requests for casual workers to be paid if they need time off work because of potential exposure to the virus. The Insurance Council of Australia says 24,000 claims totaling almost $2 billion have been lodged by victims of the summer bushfires. It will start, the council says $520 million has already been paid out for building contents and commercial claims. And the television tradesman Scott Cam has defended his $345,000 contract to be the federal government's National Careers Ambassador after the opposition raised concerns he'd only attended one event. He's told a TAFE audience in Sydney that he'll be touring training institutions now that the summer break is over, and says everyone has to make a living.
Everyone has to make a
living.
Too
right.
There you go. How much was it again?
$345,000 right. On top of all that Channel 9 money.
Absolutely. That's right. That's right. Actually, we met him at the Mudgee Field. A really nice bloke.
Look,
Scott Cam. Yep, very
not a bad word to
very
say.
Very
straight
up and down, and he was saying, yeah, he was a tradie. That's what he used to do.
Yep.
And he just got tapped on the shoulder one day by a TV producer who I think he was doing some work on his house or something, and said, why don't you come
you're
and
it.
Do something on TV? Yeah.
That's it. See, all those years at NIDA won't get you a gig like that.
That's right. Unless you're handy with a hammer.
That's right.
Yeah. Probably better to be handy with a hammer first.
I would say so. Yeah. Have a bit of a fallback, I think,
fallback
if you're
position.
In the acting game.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. That's a very good point. Thanks for that, Adam. Adam's story there with the news headlines, and we were hoping to go to the bureau now. Let's see if we can go to Katerina at the Weather Bureau. No, I don't seem to have. Yep, we'll get Katerina at the bureau now. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Michael. How are you?
Very well. Now, we just had some callers call in saying that they were hoping to get a bit of rain at the end of the week. They've got the fingers crossed. They've been checking the models. What do you reckon? What are the chances of that?
Yeah, look, we're expecting to see a front. It should enter the far southwest of the state later on Friday and generate some isolated shower and thunderstorm activity. So we could get some rain on Friday about the south. And then on Sunday, it looks like that same front. Sorry, pardon me. Saturday, that same front should sweep through the rest of the state. I think in terms of rainfall amounts, probably the areas that will see the sort of the more consistent rainfall, probably along eastern areas. So let's say the coast and the ranges, as well as the western parts of the slopes and ranges. So I'd say like areas like Tumut, for example, Wagga probably pick up more rainfall than, say, areas further west.
Right, but it doesn't sound like it's as much as we have seen.
I don't think it will be as much as we have seen. I think you could probably bank on a couple of millimetres, but I wouldn't hang my hat on any more than that. So I think probably some isolated totals of around 5 to 10, but generally most people, I think, will see less than that.
Right, okay. And that's sort of a fairly narrow region that you're talking about, so it's not widespread across the state?
I think for areas east of the Great Divide, they'll probably see more widespread and probably even slightly higher totals. But west of the Great Divide, it's only really that area along the western slopes of the ranges that I think you probably see like a significant... you'd probably see rainfall that was useful. Further north, so like the northwest, it's probably not going to see much at all. So areas like Moree, Tamworth, etc., will probably miss out in terms of rainfall for this event. But
right.
Yeah, parts of the central west and the southwest slopes could see a little bit. The eastern Riverina as well, but further west of that, even along the border, further west of that, areas along the Murray, probably not going to see too much out of
that. Right, so on a line on a map sort of out to Wagga, and that's about as far as it goes for that sort of 5 mil?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. And looking further ahead, it's going to warm up, is it, into the following week?
So after this cold front moves through, we'll start to see a high-pressure ridge extend across the state. It'll probably take a couple of days to warm up into the new week, so probably Monday still a little bit cooler than average. Be dry in the west with a couple of showers along the coast. And Tuesday probably pretty similar. Maybe from about mid-next week we could start to see some temperatures increasing.
Okay. All right, Katerina. Thanks for that.
No trouble.
And we've got a few texts in. Someone says we should tell Graham Creed about the rain. He doesn't seem to know much about it. And Graham says he's chilling in the sun after 50 millimetres at Berrigan and wondering about the dunny rolls and how stupid people are. So he's had a bit of rain there at Berrigan. Graham's fairly happy by the sound of things. Someone else who's had a bit of rain is Don Ridley, who's joined us from Forbes. He's been sowing wheat. Good afternoon.
Yeah, how are you, Michael?
Very well. So you've had a bit of... how much rain did you actually have?
We had 58 mils in the last 10 days, and then in February we had exactly 100 mils. So the best break we've had for 10 years.
Best rain for 10 years, right.
Yeah.
But it was pretty dry up until then.
Look, it was very dry. I've been feeding sheep and cattle either every day or every second day for 3 years, and I've dug in the leg in the process. So, so we've had a good break, and the boys are sowing. We're sowing winter wheat, which is Kitty Hawk, and we'll sow 100 hectares of that, and then we'll go on and sow a couple of hundred acres of oats. And we will have to spray all the while, and of course to pay the bills, I'll have to keep taking the truck in with fat sheep and steers
right.
to pay for the job, because you know we're all battling because we've all had to borrow that to the hill to put another crop in, and sort of after three-quarter failures.
Yeah, so, and you haven't seen much government assistance, and the banks aren't keen to loan?
Look, the banks are keen to loan, and we're in the process of borrowing more, but the government assistance is fine. We've bought a lot of straw hay from Deniliquin and Victoria, and we've got freight assistance with that, and freight assistance for any carting water and stock to town and so forth, but as far as our grants, there's just been nothing, and so the hardest part is paying for the fuel and paying for the fertilizer and the chemical, and we're going to have to wait for our main income, which won't be till we strip the weed in end of November, December.
This is what people are saying, Don, isn't it? They're saying that they need it. They need some grants for seeding. They need some grants for restocking. And these are the sorts of things that we used to get in the past, and we just don't have those things now.
No, well, the government's focused on other things, and I guess there are other problems. But, it's not easy. When a lot of people have sold most of their stock, we're very lucky. We've kept most of them, but it's been very hard to fatten them without grass. And we've got a chance now, but we've just sold the big half of our wool, and the price per bale is exactly $900 less than last year. And last year we got $2,200 a bale, and this year it was $1,300. So you can see that's a big. That's a 60%, 40% fall, really.
And that's because the demand has fallen in those types that you target, or just overall?
The market's fallen by 20%, and our wool is 10% lower yielding than last year. And last year it was
because of the drought.
Last year it was 56% yielding. This year it's 40%. So, the big half, it's we're exporting half of our wool's. Being exported in half its dirt, going to China.
Yeah, no. So seasonal conditions have a big impact on that as well, yeah. Don, what do you think about this talk about the rain, maybe a little bit of rain coming your way at the end of the week?
Look, we'd be very happy with 5 mils, but we will just keep going whatever happens, and we'll just, and if it's a bit dry, we'll just say it's dry. We won't stop the combines. We've got to, we've just got to, because I think it will rain, and then if it does keep raining, it'll be too wet.
So you think we are back into that sort of winter pattern that we haven't seen for a few years?
I think we've got a great chance of having a good season. The boys think I'm silly, so...
they're a bit more cautious. Normally it's the other way around.
No, I think I am silly. It's 65 still farming, but anyway, we've got a great chance this year, and... let's hope the government can give us a bit more assistance.
You would like a bit more help, yeah. Okay, Don, thanks for that.
Okay, thank you. Good luck.
It's you can actually give us a call, 96119722. 96119722 is the number to give us a call. Someone's saying they've had quite a bit of rain at Manila, and they had the best start, the best rain there for 5 years, according to Mick. I'm not quite sure of the figures they've had there. I don't think it's right. It says 2,000 millimetres. That can't be right. But so yeah, that might be a typo. But anyway, they've the best start they've had at Manila for 5 years. You can always send us a text as well. 0467 922 684 is the number to text us here at the Country Hour, and also give us a call, 96119722. It's 1:20.
You're listening to the Country Hour
on ABC Radio New South Wales.
Well, a CSIRO researcher is studying the growing appetite of European earwigs that they have for winter crops. Researcher Matthew Binns has found the pests have a taste for canola, lucerne. Those crops in particular can also be quite damaging to lupins and lentils. Our reporter Cara Jeffrey spoke to Mr. Binns about how you can beat an earwig invasion ahead of your winter crops emerging.
We normally find them on the heavier soil types, soil with a higher moisture content and more organic matter. Also paddocks that have higher stubble loads are more attractive to them. There's more shelter and more potential food in the form of fungus and detritus. They quite like eating pollen, so they go for flowers when the crops are flowering, and I suspect they would feed on flowers of other plants like trees. Over the summer, when the crop has been harvested, we often find them in trees feeding on either pollen or other invertebrates that occur in the trees.
And would you say that they're quite destructive to cropping programs and cropping areas?
They certainly can be. The worst damage that I've seen is it happened early in the season where the earwigs destroyed the emerging seedlings, and that wiped out massive areas. So what the farmer had to do was basically replant the crop to get past that initial damage at a higher seed rate. Later on, I've come across crops that just have very large bare areas where the earwig nests are located, and then there are patches where the earwigs are not, and you get some canola there.
And so what time of year would there be more about? When do they lay their eggs?
So the European earwigs generally, they lay their eggs in about April, but they can lay a second brood, and they sometimes do that later in the season, for example October. They normally come into the paddocks to lay their eggs, as you might plant a winter crop like canola, and then the eggs hatch after about 3 to 4 weeks. At which point you start seeing the juvenile earwigs. Those juveniles go through 4 different instars. It takes them until about November to become adults. And during this stage, that's when they can be quite damaging. They're feeding, getting ready to develop into adults.
And what does in-crop damage from earwigs look like? What should growers be looking for?
Damage to more mature plants is irregular holes in the leaves or shredded edges. It can look similar to snail or slug damage, even millipede damage, but a good way to figure out if it's been done by earwigs is to just dig around near the plant. The nests are normally very close to the areas of damage.
And what's the best control method if a farmer does find that they've got an earwig problem?
Sadly, there's not a lot of registered options, so if you notice high populations early enough before you plant the crop, there is some data that suggests tillage or burning stubble can help reduce the numbers, but obviously you can't really do that in response to damage during the growing season. There are various baits that I know some growers unofficially use. So crack grain laced with chlorpyrifos. There have been some attempts to spray earwigs with an aerial spray of chlorpyrifos, but that's generally not that effective. It needs to penetrate not only through the stubble layer but also the soil to actually get to the ewigs. But there is work on registering an ewig-specific bait for the use in canola in the future. That may happen within a few months.
And is there a time of the day or the night that farmers should be looking for ewigs? Are they more active at night time?
Yeah, so they're a nocturnal insect, so they feed at night time. So it is a good idea to go out to your crop. Like, the adults come out essentially as soon as the sun goes down, but it takes a bit longer for the juveniles to come out quite often. So by maybe 10 or 11 o'clock at night, that's when I've seen the bulk of ewig activity, and that would give a very good idea of how widespread your ewig population is and how dense it is.
And where to from here now with your study in this area?
I think a good thing to research is basically what sort of threshold of ewig density you need to have to be a concern. So I know from some trials I've run that densities of less than 50 ewigs per square metre are probably not much of an issue. They don't tend to cause much damage. But when you increase that to several hundred per square metre, that's when you see the bare patches of land. But the tipping point, what value, how many ewigs you need to be a major issue, is currently not available. I haven't worked that one out yet. So I think it would be useful information.
CSIRO researcher Matthew Binns from Canberra speaking there to Cara Jeffrey. Got a few texts coming in. Joe says they've had 10.32 inches so far at Mullaly this year. It says the best autumn in a long time, and he's enjoying the grass and hope that it's a kind year after a brutal 3 years. So 10 inches of rain at Mullaly for Joe. But Braith has texted in to say some cockies make it sound like a grant is part of the business plan. There are other people in need. He says some are a lot worse off than your average cocky, says Braith. On the Country Hour, it's coming up to 14 minutes to one. And just a reminder, you can give us a call here at the Country Hour, 96119722, 96119722. And Mix texted back at Manila saying, yes, it was a typo. It was 212 millimetres at Manila. And he said it's that since the start of 2020. So it's been a pretty good start for Mick at Manila as well. It's 13 to 1.
You're listening to The Country Hour
on ABC Radio New South Wales.
Renewable energy is a term that often gets brought up in conversation, but for some it's a balancing act to introduce renewables to a farming business at the cost of the productive land. But a Tamworth startup business hopes to change all that, introducing solar farms that can operate harmoniously with livestock. Eight farms in the northwest have signed up to be some of the first few sites, with the first to be constructed at Werris Creek, as Winergy Chief Operating Officer Ben Wynn and Managing Director Brad Dolheny told our reporter Amelia Bernasconi. The flow-on cost savings will extend from the farm to local communities.
About sort of 20 acres we'll need to put a 5 megawatt solar farm on, working with the local landholder here, Ian Menz, and Winergy is a best practice solar farming company. So what we do is subscribe to agrivoltaics, and it's all about designing their solar farm to achieve really enhanced results in terms of land productivity and also generation yield, and Brad can probably tell you a bit more about the studies out of the US that show those sort of results.
Yeah, look, there's been some great studies out of Oregon State University showing that if good practices for solar farms can actually increase the moisture content in the soil. And it's quite simple, really. I think some of the mistakes that we've made in solar farms over the last decade is building fixed solar farms low to the ground, and means you don't really get the sunlight and the moisture content that comes through. And so a simple design that Ben's been working on for the last 5 years has worked out that we can actually increase the moisture content in the soil by over 300%, which actually can double the yields and the grasses that are grown. And for us, being locals and living on the land, it's all about trying to have healthier animals. So our solar farms are designed to focus on the soils, which sound really strange in comparison to other solar farm producers that are all about creating clean energy, which is what ours create anyway. But if we've got healthier soils and then we have, you know, more fodder and more grasses and healthier animals, the farmers love it. We need the animals there to sort of maintain the grasses and whatnot to keep the soils healthy. It's not, I think, one of the worst practices that's happened in solar farms is people build big fences around them and then lock the animals out. And then in 30, 35, 40 years' time, when you pull apart that solar farm, you've got degraded soils. So it's all about the health of the soil primarily and then creating clean energy.
Can you paint a bit of a picture for me on what these solar panels and solar farms in general look like?
They're quite high, so they're over 2 metres high. Some are just depending on the geotechs and other research aspects that we have to go through, but they're about 2.2, 2.3 metres high, and they face north-south, so they, in the morning, the solar panels will face with the sun's coming up to the east, and then they go over to the west, so they're constantly moving, which assists with moisture and wind and sunlight getting through to the soil. And, they're quite tall, so sheep and lower animals have a successful time using the shade during the day and sort of live harmoniously with the solar panel design.
And we're here near Ian Menzies' property today. This is where one of the first sites will be constructed. This will obviously benefit Ian, but how will it benefit the wider community around Liverpool Plains?
Chiefly what we're looking to do with our solar farms and being Tamworth based is to involve locals in both the investment and the employment opportunities that, you know, these sort of economic developments bring to the region. So Brad and I could probably fairly easily run over and grab investment from foreign national companies to get these farms moving forward. It's really our preference to use local businesses, local people to tap into that wealth of resource that's based here in the regions to further prosper this area. So in the immediate vicinity, we've got, Werris Creek locals and businesses will be employed to help facilitate the construction and the ongoing maintenance. And the wider ramifications are that local businesses such as the local council, where we've entered power purchase agreement negotiations with Liverpool Plainshire Council, and that's going to provide the LGA with cheaper, locally sourced, clean generated energy.
Managing Director Brad Dollahenny. Now, Ian Menzies is the first landholder who will trial the new technology, with construction beginning in the next 12 to 18 months.
Always been into renewables. We've got a little bit of a tiny solar farmer on our farm at home, just for ourselves. I think it's the way to go for the future, to keep the environment a bit safer and cleaner.
And what about this idea, the fact that you can graze animals under it and look after the soil in the process?
Oh, no, that's a great idea, and that's part of the reason we're going with this, that we can still use the land, run some small animals underneath it, and the farm will not go out of production. So that's been a bit of an issue with some of the solar farms, that they're locking up good country, and this won't be the case.
Can you tell me a bit about, you know, what sort of animals you run and a bit about your property here and how it will continue under the solar farm?
We do mainly run a grazing property and some grain. We do run cattle. But under here, we'll probably fatten some lambs and sheep, because the cattle might be a little bit too large for underneath the panels.
I guess at the moment, we're looking across some nice paddocks with a bit of green tinge on them, and you've just had a lot of rain here and a bit of damage from floods. But during a bad time, which, you know, I'm sure you've seen some bad times, how do you think that this will contribute to keeping your operations going and keeping some cash flow into your business?
Well, that's another one of the parts. It'll take out some of the bumps from when it's really dry and things aren't so good. So there'll be a little bit of extra cash income come into the property to take those problems away a little bit.
It's solar farmer Ian Menzies. Let's go to markets now. Wodonga Cattle and Leanne Dax.
Just over 1,500 cattle sold at Wodonga. Quality was mixed, giving processors, feedlots and restockers a good selection over all categories. There was a significant lift in price for feeder steers, while all other categories achieved moderate gains. It was a near full field of buyers at the rail and all were operating. Veelers gained 6 cents, 3.88 to 4.10. Trade steers were firm, 3.58 to $4. Feeder steers bounced 17 cents, 3.45 to 4.29. Feeder heifers kicked 24 cents, 3.30 to 3.97. Trade heifers were unchanged or a few cents better, 3.30 to 3.86. Cone steers and bullocks picked up 5 cents, 3.22 to 3.67. Crossbred steers a few more this week, 3.12 to 3.20. And the Frisian boys made from 2.60 to 3.05, gaining 18 cents. I'm Leanne Dax for MLA.
Let's go to Forbes Sheep and Lambs and Crystal Ridley.
Good afternoon. Numbers fell this sale with agents yarding 19,900 head. There were 17,250 lambs penned and quality was fair and similar to the previous sales. The usual buyers are present competing in a cheaper market. Light lambs to restockers sold from $101 to $200 a head. Trade weights were $8 easier with the 18 to 20 kilo portion from $180 to $191, 20 to 22 kilo from $190 to $234. Heavy and extra heavy weights were $5 to $6 easier. Heavy lambs to 26 kilo selling from $215 to $269, while extra heavies range from $252 to $315. Carcass prices averaged from $9.39 to $9.90. There was 2,600 mutton penned and quality was very mixed. Merino ewes sold from $132 to $230, crossbreds received from $162 to $285. This has been Crystal Ridley at Forbes from LA.
Let's go to Carcor Cattle now, David Monk.
Good afternoon. Numbers were backed by almost 300 for a yarding of 1,515. It was a good quality yarding with a good selection of yearlings to suit the feeders and processors, along with good numbers of cows, though the cow quality was back. There was only a few well-finished ground steers and heifers yarded. Young cattle of the trade were 6 cents cheaper, with prime heifer yearlings selling to $3.64. The feeder steers and heifers were up to 30 cents dearer. Feeder steers sold from $3.60 to $4.45, while the feeder heifers sold from $3.75 to $4.24. The few young cattle of the restockers were around firm, with the young steers selling from $3.75 to $4.76, while the young restocker heifers sold to $409. Ground steers and heifers were 6 to 10 cents cheaper, with the ground steers selling to $3.30 and the ground heifers also $3.30. Properly finished cows were around firm, while the plainly conditioned cows were 9 cents dearer. Two score cows sold from $2.40 to $2.86, while the better 3 and 4 scores sold from $2.73 to $3.10, with the prime heavyweights averaging $300. Bulls sold to $3.18. This is David Monk at CTLX for MLA.
Let's go to Gunnedah Cattle now, James Armitage.
Good afternoon. A yarding of just 260 head. Feed pressure gone and spray rigs and tractors starting. Most regular buyers turned up and competed. A good percentage of the cattle were well finished, attracting both processor and feedlot competition. The ever-increasing demand for all types of cattle resulted in dearer trends throughout. The low numbers a factor in price changes, though. There were some strong gains through the young cattle. Lightweight yearling steers to restock of 356 to 452 cents a kilo. Medium weight feeders sold from 424 to 434 cents, with three score heavy feeders at 390 cents a kilo. Sea muscle two score yearling heifers 370 to 429. Three score medium and heavyweights 372 to 410. Three score heavy ground steers went to feed at 398 cents. Medium weight two and three score cows 250 to 291. Heavy three and four scores sold from 285 to 307 cents a kilo. James Armitage for MLA in Gunnedah.
And to Inverell Cattle now, Stephen Adams.
Good afternoon. Inverell penned 627 mixed cattle, 289 less for the 10th of March. Young cattle numbers reduced, cows similar. All processors strong, as were feeders and restockers. A well-bred pen of cows and calves sold $2,420. Steer weaners to restock sold $350 to $503. The heifer drafts $396 to $428. Light yearling steers sold to dearer trends of 22 cents, 424 to 454, and medium steers to feed also dearer, 335 to 426 cents. Heifer sold to dearer trends, light drafts to restock, 348 to 410, up 57 cents, with the medium drafts 360 to 406 to feed on. C3 trade heifers up 39 cents, 380 to 411. Ground steers to 372, heifers up 14 cents, 285 to 361. Medium cows to restock sold to dearer trends, 263 to 306. Heavy trade cows up 18 cents, 293 to 303. D3 cows up 18 cents a kilo, 282 to 311. Heavy bulls 12 cents better, 288 to 334. Stephen Adams, MLA at Inverell.
And Scone Cattle and Neil Geddes.
Afternoon. Only 186 cattle penned, quality fair to good. Prices overall dearer. All the buying orders competed, together with some online computer buyers also active. Veal steers to the restockers 50 cents dearer, 414 to 490 cents a kilogram. Veal heifers also to the restockers 18 to 20 cents dearer, 390 to 484 cents. Yearling steers 15 to 20 cents dearer, medium waste to feed 390 to 422. Prime condition young cattle of the butchers, plenty of weight this week, price is 15 cents dearer, the best 406 cents. The older steers to feed and restockers 322 to 408 cents. A single bullock to the processors 336 cents a kilogram. Cows remain firm, D2s 280 cents. Heavyweight D3 and 4s 267 to 284 cents a kilogram. Neil Geddes, Going Cattle, CMLA.
Thanks for that, Neil. And a reminder, you can continue the conversation about what's happening on-farm spraying or seeding, putting in some crops. It sounds like it's pretty busy out there at the moment. And there's some pics on our Facebook page. You can upload some of your own pics or make some comments as well at our ABC Rural Facebook page. It's coming up to news time.